Here we go on a Friday. Do we get paid today, Ursula?
Nope. So the eagle has not landed.
No. Well, we're going to earn it today.
Yes.
Here's what normally happens. We play a song that has Tom coming through the door about a second or 2 minutes too late. And we've asked the listeners to send us in their song requests because Tom is still at home on the couch. We can't say the name of the band because it's dirty. And here's the song, Cough Syrup. Tommy, get in here.
That's good.
That is perfect.
The song is called Cough Syrup.
I love it. I'm not high on cough syrup, but I think this is one of the boons of me not being in the studio. We get great music to open up the show.
Yeah, the listeners have quite the sort of playlist that they go by.
Yes,
we've never been disappointed
eclectic
with any of these. Yeah,
I will say we are running out of good ideas. That it's going. I think it's going to fall.
It's going down fast. Yeah. If you have a song you think would be appropriate for Tom to come in on, you can always text us the Online Training Academy text line 989739. I was going to be able to catch Andrew napping on that one, but no, not this time. Boy, two big issues. If you want to have everybody write to you on the Online Training Academy text line or come on through the MyNorthwest.com door, talk about two issues. Number one, of course, is abortion when it comes to talk radio. Number two is guns. All right, Hannah Scott, what's new?
So, you know, we had the voter-approved initiative by 1639. There's a lawsuit that's pending with that, but it is due to start being implemented here in just a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Even before all of that is implemented, the group, gun safety group behind that, Alliance for Gun Responsibility, is out with a more aggressive legislative wish list, basically, that they're going to be working on in this upcoming session. And it's a large one, very aggressive.
Okay. This is the most robust agenda we've ever proposed. You know, usually we have a few little policies here and there that we're looking to pass. This agenda includes about 14 items, I believe, including the high-capacity magazines.
So this will include restrictions on high-capacity magazines. Those are detachable magazines that have 10 rounds or more. We've seen the Attorney General Bob Ferguson propose bills in the past that would ban them outright. Tom and Trask at the Alliance for Gun Responsibility tells me he doesn't think that this will be an all-out ban, but further restrictions. A big one on here, we've seen this one before. This is on their agenda. Targets our state preemption law, sort of.
Specifically looking at ways to make sure that municipalities and localities have ways to restrict sort of either the open carry or ease of access to firearms and particularly sort of volatile or potentially volatile situations.
So what this is about is allowing local jurisdictions, let's say Seattle, to enact their own rules regarding open carry, say protests or in parks. But not, he says, an undoing of the entire state preemption law. That's going to have to be carefully worded. I don't even know that you can do that.
Didn't this get challenged a couple of years ago at the Seattle Center that somebody, didn't the city want to restrict?
And they lost because of state preemption law, which again, state preemption law, for those that don't know, it prohibits any local jurisdiction from enacting any gun regulations that go beyond what the state has in place.
I see.
So that is why Seattle lost that before. This is, they don't specifically mention Seattle in this, but this would allow, if it were to pass, apparently them to have their own laws while still keeping some of state preemption. Other big, there's 14 items total on this. We've got a suicide prevention issue where they would be able to take a person's gun rights for up to 6 months, I think, if you're on a 72-hour hold, involuntarily committed. They say it's specific for suicide prevention measures.
Okay.
Domestic violence issues going further. So that would allow, one of these bills would allow cops to take a person's gun at the time of a domestic violence arrest, which is new, but it would be worded in such a way where you'd have to have someone else in the home's permission or some other criteria.
Okay.
They want some state funding for gun research prevention in this state, which, you know, is always kind of a shady deal when we're talking about it on a federal level, but this would be for coming up with some research to look at further gun control or gun restriction measures.
Okay, and that's a wasted money. Go ahead.
So CPL, mandatory CPL training, concealed pistol training. That's another one.
I'm all right with that one.
Yep, I'm all right. And, you know, there's the 1639 did include firearm training for purchases. This goes a bit further and requires it for a concealed pistol license. The gun rights folks are not happy about that because it's never been that way. We would expand gun-free zones to daycare centers like we have in school.
Gun-free zones are great. If you want to kill somebody, gun-free zones are the best thing possible.
A lot of controversy about that
one
as well.
One.
They would streamline the background check system, which, by the way, is very challenged in our state. All these new background check regulations, especially when 1639 comes in, but they're coming. Various different agencies are doing them. They want to streamline that, put it all in one place.
Uh-huh.
They want to 3D gun bans. That's the other one. No more, you know, the 3D printed guns. Mm-hmm. They would have a bill that would ban those as well.
Okay.
So, now, they think there's, again, 14 very robust agenda that they are pretty confident that they can get at least some, if not all, of these done.
We've said for a few years now that we really need to make sure that we've got a gun violence prevention and a gun responsibility majority in Olympia. I think we feel more confident that we're in a position where that majority is at least closer to existing, if not existing at this point.
So he gave me some numbers. Overall, the Alliance for Gun Responsibility, they have a PAC. They get involved in endorsing or contributing to a variety of candidates, both in the state and on the national level, all the way from, you know, prosecutors up to, mm-hmm. you know, legislative people. 84% of those that they wanted to either get reelected or unseat someone else were approved.
Yeah.
Won this year.
30 members moving into the House, Democrats that won, that had as like a zero rating from the NRA. They expect that 2019 will be a great year if you want to sell guns, because the word will spread among those that care that restrictions are coming. Let me ask you, they don't seem to be going after the imaginary word, the assault rifle. Is there anything in there on the imaginary assault rifle?
1639 already did that, right?
Yeah.
They're not, no assault weapon ban. No, I have not seen that in their agenda, which, you know, Attorney General Bob Ferguson has put those forward before. I think if he was planning to do so, I would expect to see it in mm-hmm. here, in their agenda. And I don't see it that way. There's not a lot of popularity for that, especially because we just got 1639 to raise that age limit for those, what they defined.
Up to 21.
For
rifles.
What they defined as assault weapons. The bigger concern, this is Dave Workman over at the gunmag.com with the Second Amendment Foundation.
I think this proves that their ultimate goal is to prohibit private firearms ownership incrementally, just one step at a time, and it's been proven since they passed Initiative 594 back in 2014.
Which he says, and other gun rights folks say, is a slippery slope that was opened back when we did universal background checks mm-hmm. in 2014 that will eventually lead to confiscation. Now, Alliance for Gun Responsibility tells me that's not the case. It's an imaginary boogeyman, but they're just trying to make laws a little bit better mm-hmm. and do the other ones that kind of make sense.
So in 2017, 127 people in the state of Washington lost their lives to guns, homicides. And the numbers go this way. 69 of the 127 were handguns. 19 were sharp objects, meaning a knife or something else. 11 were body parts. Number of rifles involved in homicides, 11. So overall, normally rifles account for about 2% of all deaths by gun. Majority of it, so 90-some percent, other than body parts and sharp objects and things like that, is a handgun. I always find it amazing that they don't want to go after the handgun, although the handgun is the major problem. They don't want to do the handgun. They want to go after assault weapons, assault ban. They make up an imaginary term called an assault weapon. But then when they describe what the latest initiative went through and got passed,
1639.
Yeah, when you read what the thing is, it's like, well, that's a rifle. They're describing a rifle.
Yeah.
I think these folks that are trying to push this will be buoyed by the fact that New Jersey just passed a high magazine ban.
Yeah.
And if you happen to have a high magazine capacity, which I think is 10 or more.
10 or more.
Tom, you have to turn it in by December 10th.
And that's an issue. That gets to be almost borderline seizure, which is like the big boogeyman. Right.
That's
for
your,
all the gun
rights. But the court there in New Jersey said, no, it doesn't violate the Fifth. That in order to have a safe state, you have, if you can carry more than 10, they found it doesn't infringe upon the owner's right to defend himself, that you don't necessarily need more than 10. So you either have to take the high capacity magazine and create to be an inoperative. You got to pour something in it so it can never be restored to hold more, or you're going to have to turn it in or face a fine after December 10th.
Well, based on the information I have, or it says, this is, again, but in the New Jersey case, or register guns that cannot be modified to hold 10 shots or less. So that does not sound like confiscation to me. It just sounds like you then have to register that gun. In other words, they're not taking that gun from you, but if you do have one that has a higher capacity and it cannot be modified, you just have to let the state know
that you have
now,
it.
that you have it. So that's, it's not quite as draconian, but yeah, and so far, it, that, and that was upheld by a federal appeals court. That wasn't just a local New Jersey jurisdiction. It's a federal appeals court. And yeah, that, that's certainly been the case. I don't know if we want to debate. John, you sound like there are certain issues that are among the 14 items of the agenda for Alliance for Gun Responsibility that you're not unalterably opposed to and all that. And so, yeah, we, I think we can go back and forth. I do have a question of clarification that I don't know if Hannah can answer or not. I was just wondering about, I'm fascinated by this idea of state preemption and this idea that if this was allowed, this proposal was allowed, that in Seattle, like you have a license for open carry given by the state of Washington, the allowance would be then if Seattle decided, and I would guess Seattle would be in the forefront of this, that your open carry has many more restrictions or is not even allowed, that that means that you have a state license that is suddenly no longer available to you in the city of Seattle. That's sort of what they're calling for?
That's exactly what they're calling for. So okay. Like, if you're in Seattle at a protest, you would not be allowed to open carry. If you were at a park, I mean, again, assuming that Seattle would move forward with these kind of
right,
things,
right,
that's the
yes.
idea
this
behind this.
This is all speculative.
This. Yes.
And then...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to ask then, and then what is it? They say they want to expand the gun-free zones to include... to include daycare centers. Do we already have gun-free zones? And if so, isn't that already getting around the state preemption of open carry if we do have legally enforceable gun-free zones?
It's a specific thing for schools. So right now in our state, public schools are covered under the gun-free zone umbrella, but so you're not allowed
they
to.
They are, okay.
Yeah, except, though, and it gets kind of funny, because schools that do have school resource officers, which are
right.
all cops, they are
yeah,
armed.
Yeah, they're allowed.
But other than
okay.
that, they are gun-free zones. This would just make daycare, early learning centers under that thing, because they're not all considered public schools.
I don't think you can go into a courthouse with a gun either, Tom. So there are some
okay.
restrictions on open carry. But I think
I
the
see.
Problem
okay.
is that bureaucratically, it would be an absolute nightmare. Can imagine this, that you're in Seattle where you can't have a gun. But you've just traveled across the bridge in Bellevue where you do, and now you're in Seattle, you're mm-hmm. carrying a gun with you, and now I guess you would be subject to fines and imprisonment because you've now crossed the bridge and you have a gun with you. You had it in Bellevue, now you have it in Seattle.
Yeah.
So I assume Washington said, listen, for reciprocity's sake, everybody all in, state of Washington, you can have a gun, concealed weapon,
that's
all
exactly
that other stuff.
That's exactly why this was enacted
do,
30
right?
years ago, and that's
yes.
exactly
yeah.
the argument you're going to see from the gun rights folks, is it's confusing. You don't know, you're coming out of, you know, who knows where, Eastern Washington
right.
with your gun on your side, you're going to the park in Seattle for the day, you have no idea that you're not allowed,
yes.
and you know, you'd be seen with it on, you know.
Sure.
Sure.
And this flips on the other side politically to the right. Isn't there a sheriff who says
yeah.
he's not going to enforce a law that was
yeah.
just passed
that's
by
in
the
Republic
state?
Washington.
And then that
yeah,
argument
that's right.
gets different, right? He's just like, he's like, this law, it can't pertain to me. It's unconstitutional, so I don't
yeah.
have to enforce it. Because Dave Ross and I got into this morning because
mm-hmm.
he goes, wouldn't this work well? Wouldn't some of these rural counties like to be able to make some of their own laws? No, gun
yeah.
rights folks on a whole, absolutely adamantly against anything that tinkers with the state preemption law.
Number one yeah. state, Tom, for deaths by gun.
Illinois?
Alaska.
No, oh, I knew that.
Oh.
Washington is ranked where? Just take a guess. Death by gun.
20th.
41. All right, thank you, Hannah Scott.
You're
appreciate
welcome.
It.
I forgot to say one more thing.
Oh,
one
no,
more
I'm
thing.
Sorry, I've already
one
started the music. All right, all
they
right.
Want to extend...
I will make it. Andrew, can we make an exception?
Sure.
Do I get my music again? I feel like the buildup is more.
Yeah.
That's all right. Extreme risk protection orders.
Yes.
You can petition the court, cops or family members can, to take away someone's gun rights temporarily. They want to expand that to see if we can't do that when we're talking about seeing hate threats, whether that be phoned in hate threats or social media hate threats. They're still working that all out.
Mm.
But, you know, the idea being we've seen like the shootings in Pittsburgh
right.
Against Jewish folks, Pulse nightclub against LGBTQ.
Right.
So that's what they're
I see. So the guy would say something on the internet. We would hear it on the internet and we would go to his house and take his gun away.
You'd have to petition the court.
Based upon his First Amendment rights that somehow he is... the First Amendment does not protect threatened
threats.
Speech. Which, hey, everybody,
yeah.
let's go over to Hannah's house and set the place on fire. That
or
is
hate
not
speech.
Protected. Well, no, hate speech is, there's no such thing as hate speech
that's
when it comes to the Constitution and the First Amendment. Anyway, thank you, Hannah. Scott, appreciate it. There we go.
You bet.
All right. twice for the song. By the way, I haven't apologized in a while. What time is it right now, Andrew?
It is time for you to apologize.
I apologize for anything I'm about to say, or throughout the entire show, or all this week. By the way, the Know-It-All quiz is going to be happening 11:35, Tom. And the theme...
What's the theme, John? We're all dying
Nigeria.
To know.
Nigeria. Nigeria.
Of course it is. That the end country that used to be the Netherlands has been bumped by another end country, Nigeria.
It is just blatant pandering to the great country of Nigeria, where we rank number 72 in the most downloaded podcast. Is what it is?
News podcast.
Only news and only in the news and politics subgenre.
Yeah. What's the rating? What?
72.
72. All right.
Yeah.
Here we go.
That's fantastic.
Our ratings are going up in Nigeria and down in Seattle. What's that tell us? Trump to nominate William Barr. The name William Barr has been around for a long time. Barr worked with Bush 1, right? And
yes.
And now we hear from Donald Trump that a long time ago, this is his number one guy. He always wanted Bill Barr in there. Yeah.
I want to confirm that Bill Barr, one of the most respected jurists in the country, highly respected lawyer, former attorney general under the Bush administration, a terrific man, a terrific person, a brilliant man. I did not know him until recently when I went through the process of looking at people, and he was my first choice from day one, respected by Republicans and respected by Democrats. He will be nominated for the United States Attorney General.
There you go. All right. You care to mention anything about that, Tom?
It's a perfect timing for him under the glow of George H. Herbert Walker Bush. Mm-hmm. Right now, he named somebody who was a couple of years his attorney general. It's like, try to turn this guy down, Democrats. You know, you've been singing George H.W. Bush's praises. So, yeah, he said a few. I don't know. I guess it'd be controversial if you're on the Democratic side, but he's on record saying something about, you know, firing James Comey is fine. I mean, there are certain things that I think Trump can feel comfortable with. Well, he's more on my side than against me on some of his standings.
Some people are pointing to a Washington Post editorial that he wrote, I think, last year or 2 years ago, saying, you know, Hillary Clinton should be investigated. So
yeah, that's another thing. So he does. There are some checklists. Otherwise, he just sounds like one of those you know, blue blood Republican types that have been around a long enough time, so he won't be kind of a, you know, he's not, he won't be like a Rudolph Giuliani type.
Yeah, we refer to them as freedom fighters. Take a fast break, come back. We'll talk about the
white shoes.
Gayle King loses it on, was she on Good Morning America?
CBS This Morning.
CBS This Morning. Yeah. Thank goodness for her friend Oprah that got her that job. She's on there, and she actually swears live on the air because she's so upset about a particular Christmas song. We'll be right back. Believe me, it doesn't sound that interesting. It is. Hang in there. Here we go. Laura Keel. Thanks, Laura Keel, for sponsoring the Tom and Curly Show from 9 to 10. Laura's Home Loans, 833-ASK-LAURA, 833-ASK-LAURA. You okay there, Tom? I heard you coughing. A lot of times, elderly gentlemen like yourself that are in the prone position most of the day tend to pick up some fluid in their lungs. It's sort of the first sign of pneumonia. You okay?
Well, I was trying a new neti pot thing with some tap water.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Okay, good foreshadowing on a story we're going to be doing an hour from now. In the 1940s, it was expected that when celebrities would be invited to parties, they would perform. They had to do some sort of act. Two people, husband and wife, one guy's name, Frank Henry Lozier, used to sing with his wife at the time, Lynn Garland. And it became famous that they knew the party was over when these two people would sing this particular song. Hey, for me there, Jacob. You got over there?
Baby, it's bad out there.
Right, everybody loved this song. And in the 1940s, 1944 was the first time they ever sang the song. And then it became a standard that these two, Frank Lozier, who went on to write Guys and Dolls and How to Succeed in Business, the two of them together would sing the song. It was the last song or performance at Hollywood celebrity parties. She, Lynn Garland, went on to say that this song was the thing that allowed the two of them to get invited to all sorts of swanky parties, and they had tons of caviar and champagne because of this particular song that they would always do and finish every show with, or finish every party with. He then sold that song in, I think, 1949. And Lynn Garland said later on she felt as if she had been betrayed by Frank Lozier, who sold the song in order to have it be played in a movie with Roberto, who is this, Ricardo Montalban, and Esther Williams sang it.
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
hoping that you drop
so
in.
Very nice.
Frank said when asked about the song, he says, it's our way of telling everybody it's time to go home. We want to get everybody out of our house or out of the party. We would sing this song as a cue of like, hey, you know what, everybody? Party's over. Get your coats and go home. That was the original sort of beginning of the song. And it was always seen as sort of an innocent sort of back and forth. He said he was the evil of the two Loziers in the song. He played the bad guy in it. And in the 40s, it was understood to be okay. But now recently, it's come under attack as being what, Tom? Just a misogynistic sort of
In the light of the hashtag Me Too movement, it's looking like it's a kind of date rape. Because at one point she says, what's in this drink? And he says, you know, she's trying to say, I need to go. She says, no, you don't need to go. It's, baby, it's cold outside. You better stay here. And it looks like it's a kind of, it's standard. In the 40s, it was seen as innocent. It's kind of seduction and play. Mm-hmm. And now some people, only 6% in a huge poll, but some people are upset by this and think it creates a trigger reaction if you have been a victim of sexual assault or, you know, overbearing seduction, so to speak.
So Gail King was going on about how the fact you got to look at it in context.
I just feel I want to say to people, it's a Christmas song that was written years ago. I think you have to look at the intent of the song. And when you look at the intent, it's a very, to me, a very flirtatious back and forth between the two of them. I think you can look at anything and read something into it these days. And I just don't think that was the case when they wrote that song and the intent of the song. And I think we have to look at that. I mean, I think Tony Moranti in the studio, who I love and adore, said, what's next? I saw Mama Kissing Santa Claus.
Yeah, hey, good point. Norah O'Donnell says.
Did you see in that video how she tries to leave and he grabs her arm and then she looks at her arm and then he closes the thing and says, you can't leave? I mean, that part is somewhat coercive. I mean, I have to say it's making me rethink.
This song?
Yeah, it is making me rethink it.
And finally, one more last part. This is Gail. She just can't handle it anymore, Tom.
No, so I mean, so we just have to agree to disagree. I just think that it's a...
Agree to disagree means I'm tired of arguing with you.
Yeah, that's
light,
right.
Flirtatious song, and she clearly doesn't seem to be so upset. Keep looking at the whole darn song before you make a decision. I'm so irritated by that.
So I'm my guess.
People, sit down. We are losing our sense of humor nowadays. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big I'm a big supporter and big proponent of the Me Too movement. But I just don't think we have to nitpick every single little thing. I know I'm going to get hammered for this, so let me just let's just move along.
Okay.
Gail King is exactly right. It's
good.
A great song.
It is good.
It's the thing is, I actually enjoy taking those kinds of songs and giving it a darker spin, but that's because it's a novelty of a very innocent song. Mm-hmm. I think to actually see it only as the dark spin, you know, seems so restrictive and limiting.
Yeah. Well, that's what political correctness does. It limits.
It can.
It does, most cases. Facebook decides it. I saw the story the other day that this cannot be true. I gave it to Jacob to dig it up because it seemed too clever, obvious that, a small group of people on the right somehow photoshopped this thing to give the impression that there's this war on Christmas or Facebook hates Christians. And the story is what, Tom? And it turns out to be true. What is the story?
So there are various versions of this. I've seen actually a little kind of a sculpture version of this, but it's a Santa Claus all in his Santa Claus gear kneeling at the foot of the infant baby Jesus. Mm-hmm. In his sort of like a manger cradle of thing. So basically, it's Santa Claus, nodding in obeisance to the baby Jesus.
Yeah, the real reason for the holiday, Santa goes, you know what? I'm number two, you're number one, and I understand your place and what you bring. In fact, somebody puts a poem next to it. Well, it was being shared on Facebook, so Facebook decides that they need to put a screen in front of it, and they give you a warning underneath, which is the content that you're about to see has been deemed to be violent or disturbing. So basically,
May.
May. So
May show.
Click at your own risk. So then right. you click on it, and up comes Santa Claus next to Jesus, and you're like, well, where's the problem on this one? Did Facebook admit that they sort of overreached a little bit on this one, or was it a mistake of some sort?
The only source of any of this information is from LifeSite, which, if you look at it, is a very right-wing, very conservative, very Christian, you know, hyper-Christian take. And they report that Facebook is no longer censoring it after they claim that because their report the day before, you know, identified this, that Facebook was.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have Facebook's response to it, but it's if they're no longer censoring it, one can assume that Facebook took a look at that and thought, if that is really the case, and I'm assuming that LifeSite would not be, you know, falsely reporting this, that indeed it was, and I don't know why what hook or by crook they decided that it might offend people, but still.
I assume you're going to use the word hyper when describing Muslims and Jews, too, right?
Hyper?
Yeah, like hyper-Christian.
I don't know what you mean. Yeah, I mean, if the Islamic, the ISIS might be seen as sort of like this hyper-radical Islamic stuff.
Oh,
just, I mean, did you look at the website?
I looked at that and looked at other ones. Yeah, and it's... To me, I don't think there's anything wrong with conservative or Christian right. To me, those are all wonderful things.
It's all very picking. You know, it's highly selective in what their headlines are really pretty outrageous.
Oh, I know. They want to get people to click on them so they buy their advertising.
Yes.
One last story, as long as we're taking the war on Christmas. Apparently, there's a problem with this classic.
No. What's this nonsense here, Bucks? After all,
Look at the beak.
Beak, buy a snow.
Rainbow boy.
Thanks now.
Stop calling me names.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer.
Donner, you should be ashamed of yourself. What a pity.
By the way, that's Santa Claus coming in on that one.
He had a nice takeoff, too.
All right, now, yearlings, back to practice. Oh, no, not you. You better go home with your folks. From now on, gang, we won't let Rudolph join in any reindeer games, right?
I think now people look at that show, I think 1967, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and like, wow, this is really mean. Santa's super-duper mean. Everybody's mean, and the show shouldn't be on the air anymore.
I would say that it's more relevant now.
This is Corinne Conley. She was the voice. She played one of the dolls, right?
Well, than ever, because there is so much bullying going on. But, I mean, it's all reconciled in Rudolph.
Yes.
And surely people wouldn't love it so much if it left a resonance of bullying. It wouldn't be so indelible on people's hearts. And believe me, I've got to tell you, having been in it and having a list of credits over the last 60 years, people read my credits and say, oh, you were in Rudolph.
Right. So the point is, he got bullied, found some people that loved him for who he is, and then he ends up kind of being triumphant at the end, right?
That's right. And it is pretty daring to have Santa Claus be as bad as the other reindeer friends that wouldn't befriend him. And in the end, Santa Claus says, I made a mistake. I was wrong. It's a great message for today.
Don't take it away. Come right back. Tom and Curly Kyra Radio. Here we go. We talked about this story. Really, really weird. It's been known as The Watcher. It was a family that bought a house in New Jersey. They were going to move in, and then they started getting strange letters in the mail explaining, hey, we're watching your house, or I'm watching your house, and there's a whole history of this house, and I see your kids and name the kids. Every day, the guy would go out to the mailbox and find another one of these. He thought it was one of his neighbors. He hired a private detective. He told the police. They never even moved into the house, right, Tom? They ended up being so scared of what might possibly happen in the home, they ended up never moving in. And then they rented it to other people, and then the neighbors got upset. I mean, it is a complicated, crazy story that has never, ever been solved as to who was putting the letters in the mailbox in the first place. And now the news is, because you said, Tom, when we did this story about 3 weeks ago, that someone has got to do this movie.
It was so, and again, the article was, I think it was New York Magazine, it was like a 40-page thing, and it just did such a good job of putting you in the place of these new homeowners who had no idea that they were buying into this kind of horror house themselves. It became a house of horrors, not because of what happened in the house, but what happened outside to them trying to buy the house. And it's got so many great levels, because in addition to not knowing who could possibly be writing these letters to them about moving out, they would be giving you detailed information about what's happening inside your home or on your yard, reporting on what your kids are doing, and you better watch out. And there was all this really scary, kind of terrifying, threatening almost information. And so they went and asked various neighbors about things, and they got police investigators and then PIs involved. And it ended up turning the entire town or the little neighborhood, I guess, that block against them. Then they contacted the earlier owners to see if they had ever had any threatening letters. And they said, well, they've got one, but they didn't take it very seriously.
Yeah.
Things went to court. So you've got all these different levels. The psychological level created tension within the family itself. Mm-hmm. Then it created tension with the neighbors. It created tension with the owners. And there are all these legal aspects to it.
Right.
And ultimately, the spookiest thing is they still have not resolved any of this.
Right.
This has like been going on for 5 to 7 years.
Netflix is going to pick it up and do the movie out of it. So there you go.
Yes. The guys who did Paranormal Activity, those movies, they're the ones that are going to direct it, so we'll have to see. But if Netflix is involved, they are seriously into making serious movies. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that it's as powerful as the source material.
The now disgraced Lance Armstrong was on CNBC, and he was talking about his money. You know, he got absolutely devastated, all his sponsorships, everything else left. But he says the good news is that about 10 years ago, he put $100,000 down on a company that was valued at about $3.7 million. So he puts $100,000 down back in 2009. The value of the company is $3.7 million. The value of the company now is $120
billion. Oh, my God. What's that?
Uber.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And he says, you know, they didn't figure out, but they said you could try to do the math and figure out how much his payoff is now. And he says the problem is, this is Lance Armstrong speaking, he says, if I was a nice guy, if I was a gentleman, if I had done all the doping and I was a gentleman and treated people with respect, they would have let me off. But it was the way I acted that was my undoing.
Wow. I mean, that's very true. The thing about Lance Armstrong, and I was a huge Lance Armstrong fan, Tour de France and all that. The thing is, he was a real jerk to anybody who turned on him.
Yeah.
He was a real jerk to even his own fellow teammates. He was so demanding in all this that's interesting that he's actually managed to live long enough to have this kind of come to Jesus moment where he realizes it's not that I was just a cheater, I was a jerk
and a
who cheated.
Yeah, but he and for him to say if I was a gentleman, they would have, I think that certainly would have helped him, but people figured I'm going to screw him now since he was such a jerk. Come right back.
Big time.